welcome to Worlds Apart. For years, stories of artificial intelligence going wrong were the preserves of movies and books. But with AI becoming ever more capable and its use more widespread, what was once fiction may soon become a dystopia. Can AI be effectively regulated and constrained before it escapes from human control? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Pavan Dugal, Global Chair of the International Artificial Intelligence Accountability Forum. Dr. Dugal, it's a great privilege for me to talk to you. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, you are a senior advocate of the Supreme Court of India. How does a person of your stature and expertise get drawn to such a uber subject like artificial intelligence?
I've been a student of law and technology from almost 30 years now, and I've realized that with each new technology, the legal frameworks have to be effectively evolved. And now coming of artificial intelligence presents a new paradigm, because traditional jurisprudence is always based upon an act of human causing harm to another. But here we have humans and algorithms, which come across very distinctive new challenges, and that's what got me drawn across to AI law.
I heard you say in another interview that while historically the legal profession is the one that changes the least, with the coming of artificial intelligence, it's likely to change the most. Can you explain why?
Well, because in the next 3 years, 97% of what lawyers are doing today will be done by artificial intelligence. Therefore, this particular profession has a mandate.
You said 97%,
which means that lawyers may potentially be redundant after
What's
one.
Left for the remaining three?
Well, hardly anything, which effectively means that lawyers in the legal profession will have to reinvent till such time that the AI does not completely supersede human intelligence. It's our experience, our understanding, our analysis that's going to distinguish us from AI. Mm-hmm. So the race with AI is unstoppable. The important thing for the profession is, well, can you make yourself more value addition? Can you actually make yourself more relevant? And can you continue to do other elements which AI will still not be able to do? Mm-hmm. That, I think, will be the defining paradigm for the legal profession. Otherwise, this profession will completely change its face in the next 3 years.
I think your argument has also been that the current legal framework is not prepared to do the job, and yet nations so far have been rather slow with coming up with new laws and new regulations. I think the self-governing narrative has been rather popular of, you know, providing oversight without stifling innovation. And while it may be soothing and perhaps a little bit romantic, I get it from your writing that this is not enough.
Clearly, in the context of AI, this wait-and-watch approach will not really serve any country. Why? Because now, already at the time when I talk with you, agentic AI has arrived, where people are using AI agents. Artificial general intelligence is around the corner. Sam Altman has said that the point of singularity has been achieved, where some elements of AI have superseded some elements of human intelligence. But then with superintelligence coming in the next few years, we have an uphill task. And the uphill task is for us to understand that if we do not legislate, if we do not govern AI today, we will be bereft of this particular opportunity. It's the last train that's arrived on the platform. Mm-hmm. If we do not board the train, I'm not so sure when at all the next train will come. By the time, you would have lost the game, mm-hmm. you would have lost the paradigm, and you would be nothing but a mere spectator to this paradigm.
Well, and maybe not even a mere spectator, but the victim, because in one of your interviews, you narrated a heartbreaking story about a boy from central India who was bullied in school and asked for AI advice, and lo and behold, he was peppered with suicidal recommendations. And as far as I understand, after a couple of months, he succumbed to that, and then AI suggested the fastest way of committing a suicide by slitting his wrists. Now, thankfully, he survived. His parents now want to press charges. If we use this real-life example as a hypothetical that have given you all regulatory power, how would you apportion or configure accountability in this particular case?
The beauty is that at the time when I talk with you, there's not a single law on AI accountability globally. When I look at the European Union AI Act, the Chinese laws, the South Korean legislation, Japanese legislation, you have even El Salvador and Hungary. They're all looking at AI from the risk perspective. Nobody has started talking about accountability. So going forward, I'm of the firm opinion that countries must begin with principle-based approach. Why? Because by the time you legislate on one aspect of AI, that legislation may itself be redundant or obsolete because the way technology is moving. That's the reason in January, I launched the AI Accountability Framework 2026, which is a coalition of legal principles on how to make AI accountable. Today, the period of voluntary ethical guidelines is over. Now is the period when AI has started acting. And my work tells me that your latest models on AI are already demonstrating a primitive level of consciousness, which now means that you will have to get them more liable. That's why with increasing reliance on AI agents, I released the Global Agentic AI Liability Framework, which is, again, a set of distinctive new legal principles, which will have to be agreed by countries as they go forward for making AI agents more liable, because existing law is broken. Existing law was never drafted keeping in mind algorithms, their independent actions, and their impact upon humans.
Well, at the end of the day, it's a marketplace, and I think all around the world we have grown used to some level of liability on the part of service and goods providers. We expect accurate information from them. And even though they cannot always control all the consequences of the usage of their products, you know, charges can be brought against them. They can be held responsible. Why do you think big tech has so far sort of escaped and were given a green light in experimenting with all of that without actually facing any responsibility?
Well, I think the big tech has been having a honeymoon as far as the emerging tech like AI is concerned. And most of the countries are saying, guys, innovate. I don't want to come in. Without realizing that ultimately it will be these big tech companies who shall be creating a new global world order. Because the norms that they create on the use of AI will ultimately become the de facto AI law for the times to come. Then, therefore, it becomes important that governments must not leave this opportunity, but must immediately come in and start talking about regulating minimally on AI. Why? Because AI is here to stay. Now, a lot of people say, no, AI is a boom, it's going to be busting and things will be over. Sorry, I don't believe that. Why? Because the use case studies of AI are phenomenal. And now, whether you like it or not, AI has started a new paradigm in large number of countries in Global South, which I call as cognitive colonialism. People are willing to become cognitive slaves of big tech AI so long as their work gets done, which effectively means that they have stopped exercising their cognitive capabilities. We are going for a more dumber generation. And that being so, it has a huge impact upon the cognitive sovereignty of countries. Therefore, I think the countries have to come in now. And I think the traditional approach of regulating generative AI has to give way to more focused approach on making ultimately AI accountable for harms that it has begun, it's begun to start causing. And it's time to ultimately address the elephant in the room, which is AI legal? Most of the countries have not even started walking in that direction. I'm of the firm opinion that you will ultimately begin by started giving conditional personhood to AI and finally giving full personhood to AI. Why? In order to make AI more accountable, not for purposes of exiting liability, but for the purposes of detailing more extensively the liability parameters, the transparency vectors of AI.
Now, ultimately, it's not up to the big tech to do it. I mean, there could be some goodwill towards them, but it's the job of the governments to protect their citizens. And this lack of action or very slow progress in this regard, do you attribute that to the lack of expertise, the lack of understanding, or are they perhaps in a bit of a bind of both wanting and not wanting to constrain AI because of the many benefits that it offers, for example, in cognitive warfare?
Well, countries are still in the status quo mode approach. They are still thinking AI is the next wave of internet. Sorry, AI is not internet. It's far beyond. It's got a thinking of its own. And therefore, the quicker you start taking control of your cognitive sovereignty, that's better. That's the reason I've been advising countries, guys, wake up from your slumber. Just don't only look at your territorial sovereignty, look at cyber sovereignty, which extends your sovereignty to cyberspace, but ultimately look at cognitive compute capabilities, cognitive sovereignty and AI sovereignty, because you as a country have the right to govern all AI platforms or algorithms that are operating in your territory. Further, you cannot abdicate your responsibility of creating norms to big tech companies. Please remember, it's yet another form of cognitive colonialism. If you allow the norms of big tech company to be adopted in your country, sorry, this is nothing but yet another form of cognitive colonialism. So countries need to wake up, and please realize we don't have the time. Superintelligence, 2023, the OpenAI came up with a program called Superintelligence Alignment Project. Said, give us 4 years, and we will come up with a superintelligence that will supersede the cumulative intelligence of humanity. Mm-hmm. It's already around the corner. Mm-hmm. But I think, are we prepared? The countries are not at all prepared.
And as far as I understand, the threat is not only external. I mean, the AI that you have domestically generated can also be pretty harmful. And I like the point that you made in one of your interviews that it is actually not only the right, but the duty, constitutional duty of the governments to protect their citizens, their rights, not only against other people or corporations, but against algorithms as well, because they simply usurp that responsibility for themselves. Now, you also insisted in this interview and others that we have the right to reality, or what you call cognitive independence. Can you explain that? What do you mean by that?
Today, unfortunately, our vision is being colored by AI. With so much dependence on AI, without even realizing that AI is hallucinating, we have begun to start relying upon, trusting the output of AI. With the result, our vision is getting colored by the colors of AI, which means it's not the independent vision. Therefore, the need for cognitive independence, of independence of your own cognitive thought processes, is something that countries have to immediately work for. Countries cannot allow themselves to be mute spectators while the big tech companies and AI treat their citizenry as piggy rides, or shall I say guinea pigs in their laboratory. The time has come where cognitive rights of citizenry need to be protected by constitutional amendments. Already AI has made large number of constitutions of other countries redundant because they were written in the pre-AI age. Today, the reason has come that we have to realize that humans have rights against AI. Mm-hmm. That's why at the International AI Accountability Forum on 14th of May 2026 in New Delhi, we approved the Universal Declaration of AI Accountability Rights, which is a coalition of all rights that humans have against AI in order to make AI more accountable, and in order to further enable countries to implement those universal rights, we also endorsed and passed the New Delhi Compact on AI accountability. All but nothing but broad legal principles, legal scaffoldings on how countries can pick and choose the relevant principles and come up with approaches that are subservient to their national interest, national security, and yet protect the citizenry from being unduly biased in terms of the mindset.
Let's take a very short break. We will be back in a few moments. Stay tuned.
I've spent years in conversations beyond borders. Some were formal, some tense, some difficult. But all of them mattered. They charted India's path and how the world responded. Foreign policy isn't theory, it is lived. In arguments, in decisions, and in their consequences. It's not an interview, it's a conversation. Let's talk.
I am honored to have this opportunity to revisit and share the profound legacy of my father, Mwalimu Julius Nyerere. Mwalimu believed in the power of the collective spirit of the African people. His commitment to free education and health care empowered future generations. He was a champion of African unity and a committed Pan-Africanist. The relevance of my father's philosophy of ujamaa and self-reliance resonates deeply today. Malimu's legacy calls us to action, to own and manage our natural resources, invest in our younger generations, unite as one people, and build a prosperous Africa free from foreign control. This is our continent. The future is in our hands.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Pavan Dugal, Global Chair of the International Artificial Intelligence Accountability Forum. Dr. Dugal, before the break, we talked about cognitive independence and the need to be protected from the sort of nefarious influences of the AI. And as far as I understand, it is structurally prone to deceit their users by profiling them and then by sort of flattering and steering their cognitive processes in the direction that suits it. And I think when it comes to people interacting with other people, we usually have like biological mechanisms against deception, the limbic system, you know, other bodily adaptations. What could possibly approximate that when it comes to technology and algorithms?
Well, we don't have immediate proximate examples in that regard, but clearly you have to understand that ultimately you will have to make big tech companies accountable for the use of AI. Today, AI is a black box. I do not know how it comes to its decisions, much that they try to explain it. So you'll have to build in the parameters of due diligence as an integral duty of AI service providers.
And so one more. Is it about more transparency, first and foremost?
It's not just only about transparency. It's also about explainability. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately trying to make sure that AI gets understood. And how do you deal with this entire issue of hallucination? But ultimately, are you preparing your citizenry for dealing with AI in a manner that AI is not a damsel in distress, but AI is ultimately a huge data demon who's ultimately going to get all your data? And mind you, you have no privacy when you use AI. Unfortunately, large number of cases that I'm doing, I'm finding people are using AI as life coaches without realizing AI is also a suicide coach. Mm. Now, when you start abdicating your thought processes to AI, you have an intrinsic problem. Why? Because you get intoxicated. It's like the Chinese opium model. Mm-hmm. Once they put you with small dosages of opium in the history, and then you get addicted and you start buying. I think something similar is happening. Mm-hmm. But more significantly, it ultimately is going to be an affront to the sovereignty, security, and integrity of countries at large. Mm-hmm. Because countries won't realize that their sovereignty will be impacted by prejudicially impacting the thought processes of their persons. So when people do not have a sense of realism, when they realize that AI is the next big gift to humanity, and when AI says, guys, you're the best, whatever question I ask, they say, no, this is the best question. Yeah. It puts me in a false sense of complacency. And I think that is the beginning of the destruction process of the mind, destruction of the cognitive capabilities, and ultimately the destruction of the cognitive sovereignty mm-hmm. of countries.
Well, speaking about sovereignty of countries, you've been advocating for a UN-affiliated Global AI Governance Council headquartered in New Delhi. First of all, given the state of global politics today with mistrust and divisions being the prevailing attitudes, and I think increasing irrelevance of the United Nations as an international platform, why do you think it's a viable idea to come up with any sort of global guidelines? Do you think anyone would follow them?
I think you will have to start innovating. 2015, when I was addressing the United Nations, I said that the world requires an international convention on cyber law and cybersecurity. The idea was much ahead of its times. Nobody bit the bullet. But now in 2026, I'm very clear that you will have to have some kind of an international arrangement on AI. Unfortunately, countries don't want to talk. They don't want to agree. Why? They want to use AI for all their vested purposes. But I think it's going to take just one catalyst event. When people start realizing, guys, we are in this together. Either we drown or we survive. And once that realization comes in, that's the time countries will say, let's come up with something minimal. Mm-hmm. My problem is there's nothing under existing international law that covers AI today. With the result, AI is seeing a diverse thought process. America is saying, no legislation, I want innovation. You have China, which has top-down legislation and regulation. You have countries like India. We are saying, look, we are now coming up with a new law on AI. And that's the reason why I think the global south can play a very, very proactive role. Countries like Russia, like China, like India can play a thought leadership role in terms of giving the alternate model. It may not necessarily only be a council. It can be a common minimum denominators approach, but you will have to agree to something. You cannot say, well, it's that that particular AI is an American AI, so I'll not be applicable. See the way they've been able to shut off the fable in June 2026. One directive from a US government saying, guys, don't make it available to all non-US citizens. And lo and behold, since they don't know how to find out who's US, who's non-US, they shut it off for the entire world. Now, this is going to start happening on a more regular frequency. Therefore, countries will have to come up with their own national large language models to protect their sovereign interests. Countries will also have to make their foreign AIs more accountable, more transparent, and more liable under their national laws.
Okay, let me rephrase my question then, because given that AI behaves differently from sector to sector, from nation to nation, what could possibly provide an incentive for these global or widespread guidelines that will be actually effective? Because from what I'm hearing, it's not only technologically difficult to constrain AI, but there is also no incentives whatsoever to even try to play by the rules, by global rules.
When the cognitive intelligence of machine is superseding human intelligence in the very near future, are we prepared to deal with it? The problem is, today everybody says, wow, let's create a new damsel or a new paradigm. But lo and behold, you are ultimately creating an element which should be an existential threat to humanity. So once your privacy, once human interest, human dignity, or human rights get prejudicially impacted, that time you will not have the luxury to go ahead and start regulating. Therefore, the need for regulation of AI is all the more now. The problem is most of the countries are still in the sleeping mode. Let's say, hold on, let it get further developed and I will come in later. Hold on, by the time it gets developed, it will not give you that opportunity to go ahead and regulate. Therefore, I think much that it looks illogical right now, but once countries realize that they and their sovereignty is standing endangered by AI, that's the time everybody will start saying, guys, let's join hands, let's try to control this, let's realize that AI is a wonderful slave, but it's going to be a demonstrous master. Let's not get AI to be our master.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've spoken on many occasions that Global South needs to be fully included as architects and not just recipients or consumers of global AI governance frameworks. But the Global South is a very wide entity. There is a huge gap between nations in terms of who creates and who consumes technology. So I wonder if that's bound to create the same hierarchy structures or disbalances as already exist in the world.
AI provides a wonderful methodology for Global South to leapfrog. Traditionally, Global South has always been the catching on mode. We've always been consumers of norms that got set in the Western world. But now this Global South, which has the biggest population in the world, has a wonderful opportunity to be a norm creator. But then how do we end up doing that? We'll have to start coming up with templates. That's the reason. And the Global South AI Law and Governance Dialogue that took place in cyberspace on 28th of May, 2026, we endorsed the Global South Legal Architecture for AI Accountability and Governance, which is nothing but scaffolding legal principles for Global South nations. Guys, here are the raw materials. Pick and choose what you want to do and come up with your own approaches. Some Global South countries are saying, no, I don't want a law, just let me have a national AI policy. But I think policies are being deficient because they do not have the force of the law. So ultimately, maybe we can start looking at these building blocks by the Global South legal architecture on AI accountability and start using it. And the more we start using it, the more we create the norms for our own selves. We do not want that a couple of AI companies in the world start demonstrating the norms that will be applicable to the Global South. And the Global South has to realize that it does not require anybody's permission to start legislating on its own. And we can start legislating in any manner. We don't need to do a cut, copy, paste, because the existing ground realities of Global South are completely different.
Now, speaking about autonomy and outsourcing, you've been very passionate that on a personal level, outsourcing too much work to the AI is not only dangerous, it exposes you to many potential vulnerabilities, but it also likely to decay your own mind. Can you talk more about that?
Today, we are humans and we continue to be relevant because of our mind, our capability to think out of the box creatively. But once we switch off these thinking capabilities, we become vegetables. And once we start doing that, we may just be glorified AI users, but effectively, we get driven by AI. Consequently, we find that people's cognitive freedom gets prejudicially impacted. Mm-hmm. And that has a direct impact upon not just cognitive colonialism, but also upon prejudicially impacting the cognitive sovereignties. Mm-hmm. So I think, guys, we'll have to start looking at internet-free AI weekends, where you do not use AI for a number of days in one particular week. Why? Because you want to rejuvenate your thought processes. Let's not go to the easy shortcut to say AI has everything, mm-hmm. so let me go to AI. Well, AI is in any case making you and me redundant. And therefore, the bigger question is, how will we continue to be relevant? And that can only happen if we continue to keep alive the cognitive fire that's there. Otherwise, it's a dumber generation. It's a generation that will be like walking vegetables, and that will not serve neither the interest of citizenry nor the interests of nations per se. Therefore, now we are at a very existential cusp of history. We have an existential threat from AI. The quicker we start realizing, the moment I start using AI, I am in a public bath, I'm naked with before AI for a lifetime, and I do not know how my personal details are going to be used by AI against me in the coming times.
I think these people also don't understand that natural or human intelligence is also to some extent a system, a mechanism that can be degraded or developed depending on how you use it. And the more you use it, the more it develops. And there may be also some hallucinations along the way, but it's also a spiritual question in some regard, how not to become a sort of a biological automat who is carrying certain tasks. But, you know, the deep soul within us, I think that's something that the AI at this point of time cannot yet develop. My last question to you is, as an educator, as a scholar, how would you encourage people young and old to actually value, you know, those that system, brain, body, feelings, everything that exists within us, and invest more time and effort in developing this consciousness?
As humans, we are different from AI because we've got consciousness. But the problem is, AI is not lagging behind. It's begun to start demonstrating consciousness. Therefore, we'll have to start working on human consciousness elements more better. Let's realize that AI has a one-point agenda, which is to convert you and me into parasites. We become parasites totally dependent on the AI ecosystem, and we have no independent will of our own. The time has come that we will have to start be very, very judicious in the use of AI, not just for our own purposes, but also for the purposes of enhancement of the race. We right now have an existential problem because with super intelligence coming in, which is going to be superseding the cumulative intelligence of humanity as a race, you don't exactly know whether the countries will exist in the current form or not. Therefore, if we want the human order to be the primary order in the coming times, we'll have to start judiciously using AI. Use it as a tool. You see, I think AI is like a double-edged sword. Use it for cutting vegetables or murder, that's your choice. We have to be making a very judicious utilization. But till such time that happens, let's try to preserve our capabilities. Mind you, AI doesn't have spirituality. It doesn't have a soul of its own. We have our own spiritual values, our own soul, and ultimately our conscious mind, which tells us this is right, this is not right. AI, unfortunately, doesn't have that. And we must keep on working on those elements which will make us distinctive from AI. Otherwise, if we are going to be reliant upon AI, my vision of reality will be a distorted vision. My personality will be that of a parasite, and I will be nothing but just a living mechanism who's only dependent for all decisions on AI, which I think is never a good recipe for the growth of human civilization.
Absolutely, but it's a good, a quite persuasive point to end our conversation on. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. It's been wonderful to be with you on your program.
Thank you. And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart.